Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at Reality TV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at Patreon.com/RealityTVPod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Hello, hello, good morning, good afternoon. Happy cold as fuck February. What the hell is going on, you guys? I really need spring. I also really need a lot of coffee today because last night, yesterday, was my oldest niece's 21st birthday. Happy birthday, Emily, and happy Labor Day to my sister, Jill. I got to spend the evening with my niece on her 21st birthday. I mean, how freaking amazing is that? I'm actually not hungover, so pat on my back. I'd like to think maybe my body mass index and the massive amount of water that I drank when I got home last night had something to do with it, or I am just blessed with a Polish metabolism that knows how to process the vodka out of my system pretty quickly. All right, so in saying that, the reason I'm bringing that up is because I did not watch the Grammys that were on last night. I came home, I did a little Instagram search, and really all I saw was Cardi B's outfit that she was wearing. I'm not even going to say it was a dress because, I mean, it was a costume. From what I saw in the little clip of her walking up this red carpet, I don't know what the fuck the point of that was. If you can't walk in it and you are just toddling up on your tippy toes, what the hell is the point of that? Even if you looked drop-dead gorgeous, you're going to look stupid walking in it. I just don't really understand what the whole point of it was. I know it's supposed to be some couture fashionable dress, some, you know, edgy, provocative thing, but unless it's coming from Old Navy or the clearance section at NordstromRack.com, I'm not going to be able to wrap my head around it. Speaking of wrapping things around my head, I have had my earbuds in all freaking weekend because I cannot stop listening to this podcast. Let me double check the name of it. Okay, it's called Broken Hearts, spelled H-A-R-T-S. And what this whole podcast is about the Hart family. It was two moms who had adopted six kids, and tragically, they drove their van or their SUV off this cliff and killed themselves and killed their kids. This happened a couple years ago, and I feel like it just kind of disappeared from the news. But these two reporters, these two journalists, they are revisiting the case and going through all the things, all the warning signs that everyone should have seen. And although I am not finished with the series, I don't even know how many episodes there are left, it really makes you think twice. You know, my co-host Carrie on Moms on the Rocks, just the other week, we were talking about this little girl in her neighborhood who's wandering around outside, and Carrie was debating, do I say something to the parents? Do I not? I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want to get involved. And if anything comes out of this podcast, Broken Hearts, hopefully it's that you can never be too cautious, or if you think something is not your business, but you're getting a gut feeling, what's the worst thing that could happen? Follow through on it. And if it's nothing, then it's nothing. And if it's something, then thank God that there are kids that are then going to be in a safer place. Okay, that just got really deep. So let's go back into the shallow end of the news and let's talk a little bit about Big Brother. Natalie Eva Marie, I think that's her name. It was time for her to go because honestly, I am just tired of her name alone. I'm wondering if that is even her real name. I probably should have done a little Google search here. The three name thing, it's just obnoxious. I feel like that just requires a lot of effort for people that you come in contact with in everyday life, strangers. It's honestly, it's kind of selfish, right? You're just expecting everyone to say what, Natalie Marie, whatever the hell, seven syllables just on your name saying hello. You know, I don't know. I'm going to call BS. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say There's no way Natalie Eva Marie was writing down all three names in kindergarten. Come on. There's no freaking way. She probably went by Nat, just one syllable. She upped it up six syllables just to make a name for herself. You know, all these chicks actually on The Bachelor, they did the same thing. I remember there was a girl who went to my high school. It was Kelly Jo. I didn't know her or anything like that, but she was on The Bachelor several years ago. I didn't know her, but I know that I didn't know her as Kelly Jo. It was just Kelly. And I feel like all these girls do this. It's not just Kim. It's Kimmy Jo or Jenny Marie or something like that. Right. Okay, well, speaking of The Bachelor, I did watch one episode. I've had so many people say, I gotta watch the show. It's so good. It's so bad. And it is. I'm not gonna say it's so good. It's just really bad, in my opinion. I just think the whole show is batshit crazy. I started watching an episode, it was maybe a week or two ago, and I couldn't turn it off because I had to see it through. The episode was some really pretty chick. She had reddish hair and she was just bawling the whole time. Some other girl got her first kiss, or some other woman, I should say. Shame on me. Some woman got her first kiss. It was so cheesy, so contrived. But this chick with the red hair, she's bawling. She's making a whole dramatic scene. She puts on this pretty white dress, which I'm sure is supposed to be like a hint, hint, nudge, nudge. I could be your wife. She gets all dolled up. She goes to tell the dork that she has to leave because she just can't share him. She just can't do it. Bitch, you signed up for The Bachelor. That's the whole fucking point, is that you are sharing him. The 45 minutes that I watched, all I could think was, she planned this. She wanted to leave all dramatically in her white dress and look all pretty, all done up, so that she could be the next bachelorette, right? I mean, I'm thinking that's the whole point. That's still the thing, is that the one woman who makes the biggest splash on the scene becomes the next bachelorette. Okay, where was I? I wasn't even talking about The Bachelor. Oh, Celebrity Big Brother. Okay, so Rainbow Bright Marie left, and I still have not seen the last 20 minutes, but I am pretty certain that Tom Green got voted out, which, boo, I really enjoyed him. I don't know why. He just, he grew on me. Lolo and the others, I gotta say, the heavy foundation and the heavy contouring that all the women are doing, it drives me insane. All they're doing is shuffling around the house all day. So why the need for pancake makeup? It just, I feel like my skin is just dripping of greasy foundation watching it. All right, what else? 60 Days In. Oh my God, the show, you have got to be watching it. If you are not, please record it at least, because we've got to keep this show on air. I'm a little nervous already that this may be the last season, because it seems like the guards in the women's pod are on to production. This is not good. They're singling out Vivian, Jasmine, and the blonde chick with the resting bitch face for absolutely no reason. We are waiting to see if it's because the guards are pissed off about them being in the project and the experiment, or are they trying to send a covert message to the three of them that they know? I think a better way to send the message that they know that they're in the program, if indeed that's what they're doing, is really get rid of that other Jasmine woman who is stealing all their stuff. I'm still really pissed off about that, because that is the thing. If the guards know that they are indeed on 60 Days In, wouldn't they be doing their damnedest to be the best fucking guards who ever guarded? Why would they be making themselves look like shitty guards, or that they're playing favorites or least favorites? It just doesn't make sense. Now, the men's pod. Whoa. Dad bod came in hot after he didn't get his razor, which was very unexpected. He has got some balls, that is for sure. I don't know if he has a name. His face just looks like, I don't know, an Andy, a Gary, a Dwayne. I don't know. I'm just going to refer to him as dad bod. He's very indiscernible, but he's getting some balls in there. He's the super fan, and good job. Go for it. Now, the talk of shaving and razors got me thinking, and you know what my imagination does when it gets the best of me. And I started thinking about what the sinks in the men's pod must look like. I live with a man who has to shave daily, even though he's got a beard and a goatee at all times, because otherwise, I mean, one time he shaved it off, he went all the way down with the guard, and it looked like he was suffering from a deadly disease. So even just a light shave, shaping it up, not even taking off a full beard or goatee, that alone destroys our sink with just that little bit of hair stubble. So I can't imagine, nor do I really want to imagine, what 50 guys with varying degrees of grizzly leaves in their wake in those jailhouse sinks. It's got to be disgusting. Now, the moment that made me cry, we're on the complete other end of the spectrum here in the men's pod. There was a gem of hope for humanity in the last episode. There's this inmate named Willie, and he's singing. I think he's Native American. I think they said he was Indian, but I don't know if that meant Indian as in India or Native American. It really doesn't matter. What Willie was singing, it was very, I don't even know what the word for it is, meditational. He's got a little drum beat going, and the entire pod, I'm talking white, black, Chicano, all the different groups, they were in a meditative state. It's early morning, and all of them agree it's a little escape from either the silence or maybe the noisy chaos that's constantly around in a jailhouse. So Willie's doing this, all the men, it is quiet in there except for his singing and chanting, and in comes this guard who is such a dick. He tells Willie to stop, and everyone, and I mean everyone, all the different groups, who normally they're working to divide themselves, they all come together, they start backing up Willie, they're screaming out of their cells, let him sing, keep going, Willie. God, it was just awesome. The guard was being a dick and told him to stop, but as soon as he left, Willie started singing again. I don't want to ruin it. You just got to watch. It's so, so good. Okay, what else is new? Okay, new seasons of Border Patrol Auckland are on Netflix. Trust me on this. I don't even like a lot of shows with law enforcement and all that kind of stuff besides 60 Days In. But for some reason, this show, Border Patrol, it is so therapeutic. It could be the Kiwi accents or how seriously New Zealand takes smuggled apples. I'm just absolutely obsessed. There's also a show I just found on Netflix. It could have been on there for years, but with their crazy ass algorithm, I never came across it. It's called Court Justice, and this one takes place in Sydney, Australia. Their court system is just, it's a breath of fresh. They don't have judges. Well, they do, but they call them magistrates, and they have the defense, which is spelled with a C. D-E-F-E-N-C-E, which makes all the difference. And in one of the first episodes, there's this boxer. Apparently, he's very popular. His name is Garth Woods, and he was charged with affray. I have no idea what affray means, but I don't care because Garth was fucking hot. And the magistrate, who looks like a grandma, like a kind of a hip, funky grandma, like she's got the colorful bifocals, she made him repeat the P word, the P-U-S-S-Y word, no less than 5 times. It was unbelievable. And also, I just enjoy that they say the mobile phone instead of cell phone. Mobile phone. Sounds more sophisticated, more civilized, if you will. Now, lastly, I beg of you, if you have an Instagram account, you absolutely must follow this account. It's called Please Hate These Things. I have no idea who runs this thing, but they find the weirdest listings, or not even listings, just photos, pictures of homes, or randomly designed things. For example, the other day they had a beautifully designed laundry room. It looked like it was just redone, but then you look at it closely and the utility sink is brand spanking new, but it's got a double electrical socket installed within the sink. It's just absolutely insane. Or another example is a beautiful large master bathroom that's got a kitchenette complete with an oven installed in it. You got to check it out. And speaking of home listings, I got a text message from one of my friends the other day. She sent a group text to a bunch of us that was like, hey, if you guys are looking to do something this weekend, go and check this house out. You might already know what I'm talking about. I posted it in our Facebook group. There's this home listing that I think has started to go viral. There is a basement that is all kinds of 50 shades of gray. If you haven't seen it, just Google, I don't know, 50 shades of gray home for sale or something. From the outside, the home looks beautiful, but then you see these photos of the basement and there are whips and chains. There's a bed with a cage under it, and it's a beautiful basement. There's, you know, nice pillars. It's nicely done, but take a second and think about this. Okay, can you imagine? You're moving and now your neighbors know that you have got this sex dungeon in the basement. Actually, I think in the listing it said something like, oh, it's a nicely finished basement with an adult sensual oasis or something like that. It's wild. But even worse than you being the person who's selling the home, what if you're the person that's buying the home? You can deny it all you want, but people are always going to be teasing you. Oh, I know why you bought that house. But the thing that got me, besides, you know, who's going to buy the house, and they probably will strip the thing down because no amount of bleach or ripping the damn thing down to the studs is going to get rid of whatever the hell is down there. Do not bring a black light. But the thing that got me were the accessories, if you will, that were left out. I mean, they left everything out, or maybe they didn't. I don't even want to know what they put away if what they left out were things like the spanking bench. There was a large fist on a side table. But my favorite thing of all, besides the little mini handheld fan that was sitting out there, you know, in case it got hot, there's this little wooden, I know it's from IKEA because my daughter has one. It's like one of those posable mannequin things like an artist would use to, you know, sketch the human form or whatever. It's just sitting there on the floor below. Someone had to tell me what it was. It was a spanking bench and it's posed like it's running or something. I don't know, or maybe I don't want to know what that's used for or what the point of that was. It's all in the details. It is all in the freaking details. Let's get into some love after lockup. This episode titled Wife on the Run, starting out with Matt and Caitlin. Caitlin is apartment hunting. She's finally nailed down a job in Tacoma, and Matt is MIA. Crazy. I mean, you never would have expected. Apparently, Matt was off shopping for Beanie Babies with Buzz McAllister because Buzz's entire back window of his car was filled with all these little investment pieces. It's probably a good idea because Matt has negative none job prospects. I mean, he's not even asking his mom for a weekly allowance to fold the laundry. He's got zero ambition. Now, there's this handsome realtor. He's got a really nice camel coat on. You know, he was thinking he was finally going to have his house hunter's big break, but instead, he gets to carry on a conversation with the oh-so-effervescent Caitlin. This poor guy, he did everything he could. He even staged the place. He had a nice little wreath on the door. But no, I don't think he's going to nail down this rental agreement because Matt doesn't want to move to Tacoma. He's got way too many underwear to wash back home. You know, maybe he's doing his mom a favor. Maybe she'll be lonely. Maybe she looks forward to scrubbing out his skid marks every weekend. This guy fucking sucks. I have no idea what the hell Caitlin is doing with him. And you know, I don't even like her. I think she is just as lazy as he is, but even so, she can do better. The only other time we see Caitlin and Matt is later on in the episode. There's a brief little interstitial with Caitlin and yet another unsuspecting salesperson. Caitlin and a friend are in a resale shop and she's trying on wedding dresses, kind of showing off her thin frame and her bruises on her arms, trying to rub it in like, oh, I'm so frail. I'm so skinny. I bruise easily. Okay, shut it, bitch. I'm hungry. I'm craving Five Guys. I'm in the middle of my fasting. How fucking dare you? All right, Megan, Michael, and Sarah. Oh, little Maggie. She's sad because her vagina has to sleep by herself tonight, and Michael is on the tollway back to Farmington, New York. Now, he just got this text from Sarah, which is debatable because Sarah is all over Instagram saying that she doesn't need Michael, that she never texted Michael about his parole officer. It's a mess. It really doesn't matter. I don't think any of us really sincerely give a shit. Michael gaslit Sarah, and we all know that he did that so that he could take off to go meet Megan's cherry. And meanwhile, CrossFit is the one who really gets the shit end of the deal. Once again, she's got to sit there and talk to Sarah, talk her off the ledge. And CrossFit was scaring the shit out of me. Let's be honest here. At one point, she's swinging around a metal pipe. I am not making this up. She's telling Sarah that it's not okay that Michael is ducking in and out of her life and her daughter's life. And no sooner does she say this than the cherry picker himself comes walking in. He's looking for his daughter, named after the bird flu. And immediately Sarah goes in on him about how he doesn't care about her. And why doesn't he care about her? Why doesn't he care? Now, CrossFit is already in her target heart range because her blood is boiling. Her skin is as red as her hair. She's done. She goes and grabs her dressing-free salads and her boiled pulled chicken, and she starts to get the fuck out of there. But not so fast, because Sarah now wants CrossFit to be the middleman or their personal marriage counselor, and she's gonna now sit through the fight with both of them. Ugh. CrossFit is too good for Sarah. She's way too good for her. She doesn't need this shit. She's got tires to flip. She's got ropes to whip up and down. And it's not like Sarah is going to be listening to anything she has to say anyway. She gives her good advice, but Sarah doesn't listen. She ends up following Michael into the hallway, and she ends up reciting this iconic scene from Candy Burris's A Mother's Love, I'm only assuming. And what does Mikey do? He just stands there, slow blinks, and then he goes inside to, I don't know, twist up his earbuds or something. Well, now Sarah has to step it up even further, drag CrossFit back into it and the neighbors, because now Sarah is taking it to the stairwell. It's at that point that Michael pulls out the ring, and I'm assuming it's the ring that he was going to give Megan. He puts it on Sarah's finger because, you know, he really just wanted to squeeze past her, probably go grab some Taco Bell and a big old Baja Blast, and finally CrossFit has had it. It has been a day, and she just wants to get out of there, take it out on some burpees or do the Murph or whatever. So the next morning, we see Sarah, Mike, and little Birdie, and they're all playing happy family at a park. Sarah says she slept on the couch, yet I think, and I'm saying I think because I could not understand the mumbles coming out of Michael's mouth. I think he said something about being seduced by her in a shower. It was very Kale and Joe from Teen Mom. So they're putting on this happy little family act, which is a striking contrast to Megan, who's leaving Niagara Falls without Michael or her virginity. And she's calling Daddy Donnie, who has zero sympathy for his daughter, and tells her, you know, that's the choice you made, so have fun with that and reap all the benefits from it. Now, next week is the week we've all been looking forward to. Sarah and Megan are going to meet up, and oh my God, oh, I'm looking forward to this more than my next meal. Did I mention that I'm doing the fasting thing again? Well, who better to turn my hunger triggers off? Tracy and Clint. As a reminder, it's been a week since Tracy left Clint, and as Clint says, it's a very tough pill to swallow, knowing that she left me for, her addiction. Oh, did the pot meet its kettle and its lid? After all, Clint is certain Tracy is the one he's going to be with forever. The only little hiccup in this fairy tale is not knowing where the goddess is. Well, serving time. So how are we going to get to the bottom of this mystery? Ooh, I know. Spend mommy and daddy's money for an attorney to make one phone call and find out that I'm wasting my time and Kendall's hard-earned money because Tracy's already been released. Let's talk about this babyface lawyer. This sweet, sweet little old man boy who went to law school, and now he's got to sit there and try to explain things like how money goes in and out of a piggy bank to a grown man named Clint. Can we all agree it's just a damn fucking miracle that Clint wasn't abducted at some point in his life? Because this guy just fucking falls for anything. I think any smart multi-level marketing company would get their asses on the first flight to New Mexico and go and talk to Clint because he's the biggest fucking sucker on the planet. As a side note, I also loved how Clint was trying to say that he doesn't have the $21,000 to pay back Hertz rental car because he spent all of that on, you know, the stunner that he has Tracy. No, Clint, we're not idiots. He paid for, what, a bad dye job and certainly not enough under-eye concealer, which combined with the hotel room and the Ross Dress for Less wardrobe, do the math, carry the one, he's probably out a maximum of, what, $1,000, $1,500, hardly $21,000 that you just dropped. Good try, Clint. Now let's talk about Lizzie and Scott, Scott being someone who truly did drop tens of thousands of dollars on someone. Last week, Lizzie was at a Catholic church confessing her habit of conning men out of almost $1 million. This sounds to me like Lizzie should really embrace her abilities and perhaps convert to the Church of Scientology. She has some very unique abilities. I mean, celebrate the gifts that you're given. But instead, she's fessing up to Jasmine that she accepted Scott's proposal. Jasmine, of course, is pissed. She doesn't understand why her mom would say yes to the bridge-less, see what I did there, after days, if not weeks, of Lizzie telling her that she would never say yes. That is pretty shitty. So Jasmine point blank asks Lizzie, "Do you love him?" To which Lizzie answers, "Yes, I care about him. He's done a lot for me, Jasmine." So Jasmine says, "Do you know him?" And oh my God, the answer, it's everything. This is the reason why this show is so good. Lizzie answers, "No, I don't know him. You got me there, but I want to. I mean, well, I'm open to getting to know him." Now, after that, I mean, you thought that was as bad as it was going to get, but there was actually a very profound example, I'm going to go deep here for a second, of a psychological projection. Jasmine keeps saying, "Oh, fuck Scott, screw his feelings don't matter." I mean, I got to tell you, Sigmund Freud would be having a fucking field day with this one, because obviously Jasmine's trying to tell her mom she feels like Lizzie is saying fuck you to her feelings. Scott matters more than you, and I don't love you. That's exactly really at the heart of what that conversation was. Now cut to Scott. Oh God, Scott. The way they filmed this scene was, it was just so clever. I mean, someone nudged the Academy over there. Scott is holding this enormous blue bow, which in and of itself was quite something. But then he's saying, "I bought you a car. I love you." And then immediately we see that Scott isn't actually talking to anyone. He's talking to a fucking wall, and surrounding him are boxes upon boxes of oversized bows. There was a red one, a white one, a blue one. Just consider him the most patriotic, broke man in America. And it's not all Lizzie's fault. I mean, she's a huge reason for it. But also, Scott is just a fucking idiot. I got curious, as I do, so I started looking up giant car bows on Amazon. I wanted to find out how much did Scott spend on these bows. I could not find a pack of red, white, and blue bows, like a tri-pack, anywhere, which means this fool paid full fucking price for three separate bows. He's just a fucking big dum-dum. Scott's son would agree with me, because when he found out that Scott not only bought Lizzie a car, but sold all his other assets, minus this house so far, to just throw at Lizzie's addiction and or seafood platters. He's speechless. He's just incredulous. Turns out Scott is on the verge of bankruptcy, surprise to no one. He's maxed out a minimum of 6 credit cards, and honestly, he is at the point where, I mean, let's just get real here, he really has nothing else to lose, which is why I feel like he's almost just resigned himself to this. He's like, I can't lose any more than I already have, so I might as well just go all in. This is where he tells his son that he's an adult and tough shit if he doesn't like it. There's food on the table. There's electricity running. To me, it gave me Eric from 90 Day Fiancé vibes, like an Eric light. He's slightly more likable. But, you know, he's in the training phase of becoming yet another shitty father on reality TV. Now let's go into Brittany and Marcelino's shit show of a date night. Oh my God, I felt so awkward. I felt like the person who is going on the house tour in that 50 Shades of Grey house that I was talking about. Oh, awkward. First, we hear from Marcelino, who does his little slow talk. Tonight I have to meet up with Amanda because I need her to know that I'm the one up to bat now. Well, Marcelino just sucks, even though I kind of felt for him a little bit at the end of this episode. He's just so weird and smarmy to me. I guess I'm kind of with Amanda that it's really impossible for Brittany to be attracted to him. I don't know, maybe it's like a Lizzie Scott thing that Brittany feels obligated to him, but I just cannot see how there's anything about Marcelino that Brittany finds redeeming. But let's talk about this dinner, which looked like it was at Mohammed Hadid's house in the basement. I'm talking Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Those of you who watch the show, you know exactly what I mean. It was so awkwardly obvious, and maybe this is just the general consensus, but like I've said so many times before, I try not to see too much what people are talking about on social media before my recap so it doesn't infiltrate my opinions. But to me, it was obvious that Marcelino and Brittany had talked about having a threesome with Amanda ahead of time. And this dinner with the belly dancers, it's just a diversion. I think the thing that Marcelino didn't realize yet is that he was actually going to be the third wheel in the threesome. He is the one that Brittany and Amanda are actually inviting into their lovemaking. Brittany just knows that she's got to play with the timeline just a bit to make Marcelino believe that he ultimately is in control. But here's what I think happened. When Amanda got up and she took off, I think Amanda suddenly realized Brittany not only lies to Marcelino and tricks him into thinking that he's in control, she realized that Brittany does the same thing to her. I'm almost certain that when Brittany started kissing Amanda in front of Marcelino and a camera crew, Amanda had to have felt set up. I can't see any way, any situation where Amanda would not have felt that way. I think it just wasn't going down the way that she and Brittany had talked about and planned ahead of time. And she felt that air of deception around her and it weirded her out. It would have weirded me out. I think we just all felt it. Now, after a quick break, I hope you're feeling some Sister Wives and some Seeking Sister Wife, because it's coming up next. All right, Sunday nights are for Sister Wives, and this week, well, it kind of disappointed. I thought this week's episode was so freaking boring. Let's start talking about Mary's motherfucking Parowan house, which is, you know, absolutely not what her lender gave her a loan for. She's supposed to be buying the house as a second home, not an investment property, not a bed and breakfast. I have no idea how this revelation is not being known to everyone watching this show. Spread the word, you guys. I'm starting to wonder if Cody himself does not even know about this loan. Certainly Janelle doesn't, because she would be all over Mary's ass. They'd be in Nancy the therapist's office yesterday if Janelle knew. Now, besides Mary's grand opening of her fraudulent, allegedly, B&B, Aspen has been dating the big friendly leprechaun, Mitch. I don't want to, you know, throw you off here. I do like Mitch for now, so far. He's not Tony and the godforsaken street tacos and Trace Leche's cake situation. But the unicycle and the kilt thing, that's some reason to have some skepticism. Now, Cody, on the other hand, he's absolutely fucking loving this. You know he wants to hop up on a unicycle in a kilt without any undies and just bro it out with Mitch. Now, speaking of bros, husbands, Aspen, if I remember correctly, used to be open to polygamy, right? I don't remember when that changed, but apparently it has. She doesn't want to live the lifestyle with Mitch, but Mitch, I don't know, although he says no, he kind of waffles a bit. Like, he would be open to it if Aspen was open to it, but he's good for now. He'll settle just with one wife. Good idea, Mitch. You got quite a catch in Aspen, so just be happy with what you have. Now let's catch up with Isabel. Once again, this is just so, so sad. Christine doesn't know what to think about Isabel's scoliosis. Do they operate or do they not? Now Cody doesn't want to go to their same doctor, Dr. Camp, anymore. He thinks Dr. Camp is pro-surgery. He and Christine don't want Isabel to get the surgery until her curve is severe enough and they have no other option. But Isabel wants the surgery. She doesn't like wearing the brace. She doesn't like doing all these exercises, hiding behind clothes. And her self-esteem is just taking a major hit. I started thinking, what would I do as a parent? And it's probably easy for me to say, oh, I would let her operate. But listen, I mean, if she wants to have her back operated on and she's tired of doing all this kind of stuff, it is her body. It's not as if she's getting, you know, a nose job or breast implants. That's just my opinion. But at least her 42 degree curve stayed at 42 degrees. So I guess there's no need for surgery now. So let's move on to talking about the big news. Aspen and Mitch are officially engaged. The whole family cheers and hugs and does everything they didn't do when McKelty announced her engagement to Tony and his tacos. Gee, I wonder why. Now, before we even had a minute to just take in the moment, bam, we are off to Utah to look at all these wedding venues. And man, who would have thought that Mitch's mom is the one and only Carmen Asandiago? We found her right there in the frozen Italian villa-themed tundra. Now, Cody certainly likes a mystery because he couldn't wait to tell Carmen all about his famous dance moves. It's comical to me how all four wives think that Cody is flirting. Maybe I am just dumb to how flirting works, which is, I mean, let's be honest, very likely. But he gave the woman a high five, like twice. I hardly think a little wink or a high pony on date night is in the cards for Miss Sandiago and Cody. All right, so after all this wedding shit, they're at some villa in a ski chalet. They go to another Italian restaurant, Greenhouse. And you guys, I don't know. I just don't give a shit about this wedding planning. I like Aspen. I think Mitch is fine. But after Tony and McKelty's planning, it took a toll on all of us emotionally, physically, mentally. It's like I can't let myself get too emotionally involved in this wedding. Hopefully we just leave it at Aspen being happy. She got the venue she wanted. And yeah. In my opinion, she deserves it because she's the oldest daughter, which means she's the one who lived with Mary the longest. So she deserves whatever the fuck she wants in my book. Now, the second hour of Sister Wives, we completely switch gears. We're now going to Mary's motherfucking Parowan house. But first, we got to hear Cody talk about his socks and underwear for over 4 minutes. I timed it. And what is worse than losing your chargers? Hearing about Cody and the Sister Wives losing their chargers. I mean, producers were digging deep for material this week. Too bad they didn't dig deep into Mary's mortgage shenanigans. Some, and I like to emphasize some, of the family eventually makes their way to the bed and breakfast, and Mary and Bonnie are just thrilled to be giving the tour of the house that is most definitely a second home and not an investment or rental property. Now, I'm not a big fan of bed and breakfasts because honestly, I'm afraid the innkeeper is just gonna stop and chat with me, be all up in my business, like the randoms that seem to flock to me on a daily basis. So I don't really have a lot to compare Mary's bed and breakfast to, but something tells me it's a little dated and Bonnie would be talking your fucking ear off and it would be the worst vacation of your life. Even Mariah agrees. I mean, did you see how miserable she was there? I think she just came for a few of the cinnamon rolls and now she's stuck here listening to fucking Cody, who's bitching and whining about wanting to move out of Vegas. He always wants to fucking pick up and move. I feel like he exhausts people all around him and they aren't paying him attention for his dance moves or stringing lights across the fucking cul-de-sac, and all of a sudden, oh, he's got to pick up and go. I don't even believe this persecution shit that he pulls. None of the wives want to move anyway. Cody's doing this I'm a victim act, kind of like how Mary feels, right? Because she was, wait for it, catfished. Did you know Mary was catfished? She and Cody, they're just victims of people who want to persecute them and their families. I was wishing I was being catfished and left blinded by the reflection of Mary's ugly as fucking sin LuLaRoe shirt watching that sunset scene. Good God. I'm going to break it down for those of you who do not watch the show. Mary and Cody are standing on the front porch completely parallel to one another, and they're staring at supposedly the sunset, but all I saw was a depressing, gravelly street, and it is just complete silence. Awkward silence for what seemed like hours, and all of a sudden, Mary lets out this loud sigh, and only then does Cody start rambling on and on about how Mary needed to do this for herself, and she needed to do it without him so she could prove she could do something on her own. So he's pretty much just giving her permission to stay there for good, right? I mean, he can quit the act about wanting to keep her with the family. We know what you're trying to say. Mary can stay up there in the cinnamon roll capital of southwestern Utah, and then Robin can just formally declare herself first and only wife, and they can all live happily ever after. That's what I really think Cody is going for. He just can't be the one to say it. Now, next week looks pretty damn good. Cody learns PowerPoint, and then he discovers the local Kinko's. After a quick break, let's get into Seeking Sister Wife. Oh, Seeking Sister Wife, what a spectrum of guys we have on this show. We have Dimitri, who is the slimiest of slime. And then we have Kip, aka Colton, who, I mean, does he even have any testosterone in his body? It just blows my mind that he found one woman, let alone two, and looking for more that want to share a bed with him. But we'll get to them. First, let's talk about Dimitri and Ashley Snowden. Every week that goes by, Dimitri just gets creepier and slimier and more self-congratulatory. He thinks he is so worldly and open-minded, yet he is unforgiving of Vanessa eating red meat on their date night. And this is the big thing that drives me nuts about the Snowdens. They proclaim that they are not religious, they're spiritual, nor do they practice a certain faith. They're just open and accepting of all differences. However, they subscribe to very strict rules and judge others when they do not do the same thing. And Ashley's got that bindi thing going on, which, by the way, is a religious item, if you will. I'm not using the right terminology, but you know what I'm saying? They're very hypocritical, or their belief of having a non-belief system is questionable. I'll just leave it at that. Now, what exactly would be the purpose in saying that for Dimitri to have it in mind to have three, possibly four wives? Because if this is something that you believe because of your faith, okay, it's not my thing, but I can understand it. You are reading it in a certain doctrine, and that's what you're going to do. But what is Dimitri's reasoning, and why is Vanessa down for this? To me, she seems far too smart and capable of meeting someone who just isn't Dimitri. So here's what I started thinking as I was watching this. Number one, is this all for the show? Is Vanessa a real person who really wants to do this sister wife thing? And number two, is it because it's part of some greater elaborate bullshit plan the Snowdens have cooked up to launch their lifestyle brand? Because certainly whatever career they have going doesn't seem much of a career. It's just a lot of words. Furthermore, I think Dimitri can pull this don't cross the line crap like he is, you know, a faithful husband. But if you listen to what he's saying, and even Ashley, they're not consistent in their message. He follows up this, oh, don't cross the line, all that kind of shit. And then he says to Vanessa, oh, well, we can get it in. Oh, yeah, no worries. We'll get it in if you want to get it in. Ugh. That's not something an ontological architect who has a certain lifestyle in mind and is all one with the earth and peace and bullshit. That's not something a person like that would say. I just don't see a real person. Let's just use Vanessa in this situation. I don't see a real person like the real Vanessa wanting in to an already existing family. I mean, why is she there? Just to babysit while Dimitri and Ashley, these two assholes, go pick up the dry cleaning and talk about Vanessa and their anti-pork beliefs? It just does not read believable to me at all. Now let's talk about Bernie and Paige McGee, because they are certainly real, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. After living in a camper for, I think they said, over a year, they finally found this really cute rental house that honestly, it looks pretty decent. Now, would I have laid my body all over the carpet? Absolutely fucking not. But I'm going to forgive them because, once again, they're kids. They seem like really good kids, which means they did something right. I cannot forgive them for leaving out the part, and this is where I'm talking about things getting real here, where they sent me, Jody, an invite to be their sister wife. Now, to be clear, I didn't use my name, and I may have said I was of Swedish or German descent with blonde hair, and I enjoy traveling, but yeah, thank you to Sarah for finding the Patreon bonus episode that I am referring to way back when. I don't even know, when did this first season air? October, November, last summer, whenever it was, I created my polygamist alter ego. For those of you who are signed up for Patreon or who want to sign up and listen to it, it is bonus episode 29. Thank you again, Sarah. She found the episode. She confirmed to me that it was a BP McGee, Bernie Page McGee, that contacted me. And now I'm wondering if they were at that same groovy little coffee shop when they wanted to share eternity with me. I mean, what if I was almost in this very House Hunters-esque episode? Bernie and Paige were hamming it up, you know, like on House Hunters when they decide on the house that they're going to buy by counting to three at the same time and saying the house aloud and, oh, now call the realtor. You know, I can dream. I do wonder if, okay, now I'm fantasizing here. What if next week on the episode where Paige says that she catches Bernie texting other women on this polygamy app thing? What if I was one of those women? Now, I never responded to him, but maybe she saw that Bernie reached out to a hot German-Swedish polygamist. I mean, that would really take really my life altogether to a whole other level. But I hope I didn't, you know, cause any marital strife. Little old me with no profile picture and a fake personality. I would really feel badly about that. Maybe. Kind of. Not really. Okay, let's talk about the Eldridges before I get, you know, too high on myself here. Well, tick tock, tick tock. Where's the new wife with whom we'll share up? Cookie? Oh, pig cookies. With notes from the kids? No. I mean, it's a nice gesture, but between Vanessa and Charisse, you think they couldn't have thought of something that they didn't have to bake and then pack and preserve while they flew across the fucking country? stupid. Little ol', I think her name is Jen, comes bounce walking her way to the picnic area. And of course, guess who's all too eager to hug her? Charisse. Charisse flashes a smile I haven't seen since she hugged the last potential wife. And there's a lot of giggling and laughing and long creepy stares from Jeff and Charisse towards Jen. Charisse, man, she's trying to steal Jen's attention by telling her she has virgin nails. Pipe down, chatterbox. She's almost already taken. But Jeff really seals the deal, and he invites Jen to go ice skating tomorrow. Well, turns out Jen is kind of like a Nancy Kerrigan to Charisse's Tanya, because Jen is a rink rat. I don't know for certain if that's actually a phrase, but it has a ring to it, doesn't it? Toe pick. Virtual fist bump if you got that reference. Okay, well, they get to this date and Jeff just gets down and starts limbering up with this deep quad stretch. He's doing some light hammy work. And Jen is lacing up her skates. She even has the fancy kind of pants that go around the skates. And she loves to talk about her days competing. She can't stop cackling about it and accidentally doing triple sow cow double toe loop combinations. It's just so natural for her. Now, this is where I really started hearing her laugh on a visceral level. You know who Jen's laugh reminds me of? The girlfriend in Sleepless in Seattle that Tom Hanks is dating when Noah tries to write into the radio station and calls in. You know what I'm talking about? It's the interior designer. Wow. It's a lot. I mean, the chick seems nice, but I also think she goes to extremes. She starts overgeneralizing things and saying that she's really into Jeff because it's very rare to find a man that cares about his kids. I mean, come on. It just didn't read genuine to me at all. It was very bizarre to me, the things that she was saying. And, you know, if she truly found Jeff attractive, she could probably find guys around her area that are not already married twice that she could have a very happy life with. Now, turns out maybe some of my gut instinct, probably many of your gut instincts, are ringing true, because we see Jen ducking behind a building next week, smoking a cigarette, and the producers are saying that they have a little situation on their hands. Now, the Winders, we're talking Kip, aka Colton, Tammy, and Sophie.
Sadie's birthday party was pretty disappointing. So we're going to go to the farmer's market and stare at concrete tortoises and make people feel awkward.
You guys cannot tell me that this family is not full of shit. I thought the whole farmer's market scene was just another example of a cop-out. You cannot tell me that Sophie, I'm talking about the second wife here, you can't tell me that she's going up to this man's cheddar booth. She's eaten his mild cheddar before and she didn't know that he too was a polygamist. If the town is really as small as they say it is, they for sure would have known that their local cheesemonger had two wives. It's bullshit. You don't eat a man's goat cheese and not know the basics. And shame on them for walking away and not even buying any. Support your local polygamist, for Christ's sake. I mean, promote the man's cheese business. We all love a good charcuterie at this point. I'm sure we would have went online, found this guy's Facebook page and ordered some, I don't know, Gouda or something for our next charcuterie board. I just thought it was bullshit. They absolutely know what they are doing. They don't really want to go out in public. They just want this show to be seen by the people around them before they actually go out in public. Does that make any sense? Like, they don't have enough guts to do it now. They want the show to go forward, almost like the Browns did and the Dargers or the My Five Wives people. Something about them is not ringing true. And how dare they start looking for a third wife before they're all even living together? What are you going to have? One wife here, one wife there? It doesn't work that way. I mean, come on. I'm a polygamous expert. It doesn't work that way. Maybe that's what we do. We start a polygamist consulting company. Okay, that's about it for this week. Make sure you check out my new podcast called Total Request Podcast. It is Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom and I. This week we are talking, Jersey Shore, the one where Ronnie just hulks out. He throws an IKEA bed frame out the window. We also have Amy's Baking Company up. We have Flavor of Love, Flavor of Chicken. And I think we are going to be covering Extreme Love next time. I also have the second part of my Patreon episode with Melissa from Moms and Murder. We are getting into Diane Schuler, Gypsy Blanchard. It's a great episode. Check it out. Also, Moms on the Rocks. This week, Carrie and I start talking about our obsession with the Charlie Project and cold cases. For all those links, just check the show notes. Please remember to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, spread the word, please, and thank you. And until next time, stay warm and stay salty.